Good morning, everybody. Like Mark said, my name is Derek, and we're so excited to be here. We get to team teach together this morning, which is going to be really fun as we see the conclusion of our story in Esther. And I think we talked about this a few weeks ago because we've seen it throughout the book, but at the end of Esther, they institute this amazing celebration, Purim, right?
Purim.
I did look it up to make sure, like, how to pronounce this name, and there were, like, three or four different ways of doing it.
See, I don't even do that. I just say it with confidence, and then you guys assume that I've looked it up, and so you just grab it and go with it, Derek.
There's going to be some names here in this story that we read, so
that we're
you're
definitely going to go through quick.
You're going to go through it quickly.
Oh, no, you. Hopefully it's your slide.
Okay.
I hope. Noted.
Well, I'm really excited because I think what this does for me, this story, is it's a reminder of the importance of celebrations, of dates, of monuments in your life, of anchors. Now, I know that we all have important dates in our life, right? What are some important dates that come to your mind? Maybe it's birthdays.
Those are good.
Anniversaries.
Those are very important to remember.
My wife has this really cool piece of artwork in our living room that has our anniversary dates on it, and she swears that it's just because it looks cool and it has nothing to do with a daily reminder.
It reminds you, doesn't it,
Derek? It does remind her.
I knew it.
Dates are really important, though, and I look back at my life and I have these milestones, these anchors, these things that I remember, but more than even just normal day-to-day life, I have these spiritual monuments in my life, too. I have these spiritual anchors, and I don't want to bore you with my whole life story, but if we ever did and I told you my story, April the 13th is going to come up. April the 13th, 2000 is when I had this moment in my life when I realized that I really did believe in Jesus and that I didn't want it to be just my parents' faith, but I actually wanted it to be my faith. I could tell you about a couple of years later when I went on a mission trip to Mexico and just that moment of just seeing the world is bigger than what I once knew, and I wanted my life to count for something. And that was monumental for me, right? So we have these moments and we have these dates. And the reason those are so important is because I can tell you about other times in my life, like when I lost my dad and it shook our family. And if I didn't have these moments, these anchors that kind of solidified my faith, it really would have shaken me to a much greater degree than it did. So these moments, these anchors, these dates are so important, and that's what we get to talk about this morning.
Yeah, it's really cool because the Jewish people, as we've read through Genesis and we've done Exodus, and now here we are in Esther, and a lot of these Old Testament books, we see God's faithfulness to these people, these called people. And so all this stuff that's happening to the Jewish people throughout the history, their history, we see God's hand, his sovereign hand, his deliverance. And that's what we're going to be looking at today, is kind of the conclusion and Purim, this reminder of God's faithfulness. So if you have your Bible with you, we want to invite you to open up to Esther chapter 9. We're going to do 9 and 10 today. And if you know how long I tend to preach, I want you to be assured that chapter 10 is only 3 verses long, okay? So we will do our best to move through this quickly. A lot of it is a recap, but I really think that we would miss out if we didn't talk about Esther 9 and 10, because I hope today that there are some encouragements for you, like Pastor Derek was just talking about, to grab a hold of dates or moments in your life where you can say, God was faithful to me, to my family. God drew me unto himself. God saved me. God is sovereign in my life. And those, that's what the encouragement today is going to be, is grab a hold of those dates, because then when you go through the toughest times in your life, the kinds that shake the foundation, that rock you, you'll be able to look back on those dates. And so I think it's so important. So we're going to start in chapter 9, verse 1. We're going to read some, and then we'll look and see what God is telling us through these verses.
Chapter 9, verse 1. Now in the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, on the 13th day of the same, when the king's command and edict were about to be carried out, on the very day when the enemies of the Jews hoped to gain mastery over them, the reverse occurred. The Jews gained mastery over those who hated them. The Jews gathered in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who sought their harm, and no one could stand against them for the fear of them had fallen on all the peoples.
So here we are, chapter 9. This is where all the tension of this entire book. So if you've been with us the last 2.5 months and you've seen how Esther has unfolded, it's taken place basically over a year or so. And this edict, it had come out, can't be reversed. It's crazy that they could kill all the Jews throughout the empire. So there's a lot of tension that has been building. The Persians had received the edict, signed, sealed, and delivered by the king, even though it was Haman, his number two. And so this edict to slaughter all the Jews, man, women, children, and then plunder all their goods, right? So not only are we going to wipe out all these people, but you know what? As an incentive, you can take whatever they have. This edict that Haman had now has come to fruition. Here it is right now.
2 months later, something really interesting happened in the story, and there's another edict that was issued by the king. They received another one which encouraged the Jews to defend themselves and others to defend the Jews.
And this
as
is
well.
When Haman died. Yeah, you know, so again, if you haven't been with us, the number two ends up dying because, well, he was an evil man.
So can you imagine the tension that's in the air? The king's word is law, right? But there are these two edicts that are contradictory to one another. So which one is going to pan out? Which one is going to prevail? So this is where we see ourselves in the story at this point.
So essentially, the author is summing up what's happened here in these verses, and that's what we tried to do quickly there. And the description is purposeful. You need to know what's going on. So I'd encourage you, if you're new to the Grace Works today, maybe your first time, this afternoon, read through Esther. It's an incredible story, and you see God's sovereign hand throughout it. But the author here uses a couple of Hebrew verbs in verse 1 that are rarely used in the Bible. And they're meant to draw our attention in, to paint the picture vividly for us. The first one is hoped. Okay, on the very day when the enemies of the Jews hoped to gain, right? He uses this word hoped. It's only used 6 other times in the Old Testament, and each time it conveys the idea of waiting expectantly or with great anticipation for something. And so apparently the enemies of the Jews had been looking forward to this day with great expectation. Right? And this goes back to Haman, right? Haman wanted to get rid of Mordecai. That's why the whole edict came out. The number two in the land wanted to get rid of Mordecai. And so instead of saying, I want to get rid of this guy, he said, I want to get rid of these people. And Mordecai was one of those people. So there was this idea. So Haman, had he still been alive, and the 2 months that he was alive after the edict came out, he was waiting expectantly for this day for sure.
Which kind of leads us into that second word that's pretty interesting in this text, to gain mastery. It says when the enemies of the Jews hope to gain mastery over them, and this word too is only used a small handful of times in the scripture, and it's a verb referring to people or to groups who are overpowering another, and it's very bad for the subordinate. So this mastery gained, it has to do with like exploitation and the abuse of the Jewish people. So the point is, this is a bad situation here, and there's a very real group of people who are excited about inflicting the worst on the Jews here in the land of Persia.
But with all that being said, what we talked about last week happened. The reverse occurred, okay? And we talked about God being the God of the reversal, taking a situation that looks awful, that looks like it's going to end really, really badly, and turning that around. And really, that's what God does with us, right? In our lives, we're heading down a path. We're in sin, and we're in rebellion, and we are against God, and God turns that around. And here we see this great reversal, right? This turn, the tables turned. And when Esther went before the king, her husband, and said, hey, this is what happened, the king took care of Haman, and the king allowed for another edict, right? One that then said, the Jews can now defend themselves. The Jews not only can defend themselves, but they can actually kill the people that want to attack them and plunder their goods. So again, we saw this great reversal.
And I think that's so encouraging to me, and I've been thinking about this all week, because I realize that some of us here this morning, we are not in the good section of our stories, right? We're in the middle of the confusion. We're in the middle of, hey, there's this circumstance or there's this problem or there's this fear or worry or something. And so we can't quite see our way to the end of it yet. We're just stuck in the middle of it. But I'm so encouraged because, and this is what you're going to hear a lot this morning, God's faithfulness in the past gives me confidence for my present and my future, right? And so that's where we go back to these anchors and these monuments where God has proven himself faithful, and that's just what he's doing here. And I love this word that Mark just talked about, the reverse occurred, right?
Right. You see here that the enemies wanted to gain mastery, but the reverse happened. So now we have the Jews coming out on top. Right? This remnant of the Jews that were spread across the 127 provinces of Persia were able to gain mastery over their enemy. And so again, we see God's sovereign hand. A book that's in the Bible, and it's there for a reason, and yet God is not mentioned once because the author has written it in such a way that he wants you to know that in your life, when you don't see God, when you don't feel God's presence, that he is still with you, and he is sovereign, and he is in control, and he's going to walk with you through the worst. He is going to carry you when you can't walk any longer because he loves you so much. God behind the scenes. And that's what we see here. We see this in verse 1 of chapter 9, that idea that even though it looked bad, God was there and he used this great reversal. I know we've camped on this verse a little bit longer than we normally would, but we want you guys to understand that God is incredible. And what he did here for the Jewish people, he will do for you. Believe that, know that, trust that. And if he has for you, that's one of those monuments that you were talking about. Look back on that and know. You look back and you see that faithfulness so that you know no matter what you're going through now or what might come at you in the future, that God will be faithful through that too. So it's so cool.
And I think verse 2 is interesting because it helps us kind of solidify some of these moments. And here's what we mean. Verse 2 explains that, okay, the Jews had gathered in their cities throughout all the provinces to lay hands on those who sought their harm. So what we see here is the people of God, when they were standing together, no one could stand against them. And I just hope that you can kind of see that visual because it's true for us even today. It's true when the people of God, when the community of other believers, which is what we are a part of here this morning, when we stand together, there is great strength because the enemy seeks to divide us. So the enemy seeks to make me have hurt feelings against you and then not show up next week. You know what I mean? He seeks to create conflict amongst us. That doesn't mean that we're always going to get along or we're always going to like each other or there won't be disagreements. But at the end of the day, I think it's so important to see us as a family. And even though families might have, you know, a disagreement from time to time, we have to remember that when we are staying arms locked with each other, when we are committed to being here, when we are committed to community groups being such a huge part of that, the real enemy wants us to fall into the trap of fighting with each other. And that's just a distraction. And so as we are staying in community, we can have these moments solidified in our lives.
We are better together in the church. You got to believe that. God designed it that way. And like Derek was saying, Satan tries to divide and conquer. And that can look, it can look so different. It can be like, man, that guy or that gal really frustrates me, so I'm not going to go to church. Or, you know, it could be even personal where you just wake up and you're like, I don't really feel like getting up today, going to church. He tries to keep you from being here because he knows that together we can do incredible kingdom things. Now, again, I'm never going to come down hard on you for missing church. And sometimes you do need to just sleep in. But know that the power that you need for your life comes by meeting together, being a part of a church. Whether it's a Grace Works or somewhere else, if you're just visiting today, be in your church because it's so important. We need to be unified. And really, this truth is the reason that we believe in the one church, two campus, and we're praying for three and four, and that's not to grow the Grace Works name. It's not to make something big of us, but it's so that we can stand together. Last weekend, the Schicks, a very vital part of our church campus here, the DuPont campus, they decided they were going to go and attend in Lacey, because they believe in the idea of one church, two campuses. We are the Grace Works. When we talk about getting together on Friday night, on Good Friday, and inviting them in, they are part of our church body. They just meet in a different location. Because together, we can go further. We've looked in the last 5-6 years of the Grace Works, actually for the whole 9 years, but especially over the last 5-6 years, we've looked at a couple different opportunities of merging with other churches, of coming together with the goal of affecting our community, of reaching the world through the gospel of Jesus Christ, through missionaries. Again, the idea of, can we together go further than just the one church body that's here? And right now, down in the Lacey campus, God has brought another church looking for, again, that opportunity. And it takes time, and there's a lot of questions that need to be asked. And that's what they're going through right now. But again, it's that idea, can these two church bodies come together, unify around the gospel of Jesus Christ, and go further together? It's exciting. That's what we want here. And so that's why when people come to DuPont, we would love for them to come and get involved at the Grace Works. But we want them to believe in the mission of the Grace Works, what's going on here, what we're doing in our community, what we're doing around the world. And if they can get on board with that and they want to be a part of that, that's incredible. But if they need to go somewhere else, we want to encourage them to find a church that preaches Jesus Christ, but that they can be a part of, that they can believe in, because church is so important. And so over the next few months, we may hear more about this church down in Lacey that wants to join with us, and can we go further together than we are right now? And again, how that would affect the DuPont campus, it probably wouldn't much, because we're here and they're down there. But again, we're one church, two campuses, and we want to move forward together, stronger, further, faster, more effective, all those good things. So yeah. God desires his people to be together.
Yeah, well said. Verse 3, as
oh,
we
here
keep
we go.
Tracking through.
Yeah, and now it's my turn to read, isn't it? All the officials of the provinces and all the satraps and the governors and the royal agents also helped the Jews. Now that's interesting. We'll talk about that in a second. This is crazy. These are non-Jew leaders helping the Jewish people. For the fear of Mordecai had fallen on them. For Mordecai was great in the king's house, and his fame spread throughout the provinces. For the man Mordecai grew more and more powerful. The Jews struck all their enemies with the sword, killing and destroying them, and did as they pleased to those who hated them.
So this is a turn of events, and now we see all of the officials, the royal officials, those in the government, they're trying to aid the Jews in this edict battle. Over the last 10 months, Mordecai, his fame and influence had grown. He was the second in command, and he, again, just grew more and more powerful.
Yeah, so, talk about another reversal. Haman wanted to kill Mordecai. Haman, the number two, wanted to kill Mordecai. And instead, in God's sovereignty, Mordecai survives. Haman is the one put to death, and he's the number two.
Yeah, there's this really volatile relationship between these two guys. It could have exploded at any moment. But here we are in this story where God changed things completely. And that's just beautiful. Through his providence and his sovereignty working behind the scenes, that's this beautiful picture of God using Mordecai's dark days for a greater purpose. Even if he didn't see it in the moment, God was always working behind the scenes. Yeah. So difficult times and conflict. Haman, the mourning and the decree of the genocide that was against his people, they were these stepping stones that God were using to bring Mordecai to that place.
But Derek, isn't that how God tends to work in his people's lives, though? If you look back at your own lives, you know, God grows us. God grows us through the trials, through the toughest times. And here we see Mordecai, who was fearing for his life, fearing for his people's life, now is the number two. to in command. He tends to take the brokenness of this world, the brokenness we find in our own lives, right? That's where God likes to show up. And he likes to be seen through that. He likes to move people forward. He likes to create healing and health, right? The difficult times, crisis times, right? God brings us through that for the greater purpose, which is the glory of God. So that I can stand and I can testify what you guys are going to do next week. You're going to testify about the goodness of God and what God has done in your lives and his faithfulness. And we're going to sit out there as a church body and go, amen. That is what I believe God will do, and not only in your life, but in your life, in your life, in your life, and in my life. God is going to show up. And the glory will not be for us that somehow we made it through this tough situation, but the glory goes to God. God above, right? No matter what the situation is. And that's what we see going on with Mordecai here.
We definitely see it here in this story, because you remember they are in exile in a foreign land. So they are the helpless kind of, they're not in their on their home court, so to speak, you know? So it's all the more example of God's providence and God's goodness and God's sovereignty, where at the end of the day, there's no question that it was God who did it. And you can't look in the mirror and say, well, yeah, I kind of had that under control. You know, it was always one of those things that God is definitely the one working.
Right. If you go back to the beginning of the book, the Jews were supposed to be wiped out. That's what it was. I mean, they were way outnumbered. And yet we see God's hand, this great reversal, and God was with them. And at the end of there, it says that the Jews struck their enemies. Those who did rise up against the Jews were struck by the Jews.
So verse 6.
This worked out exactly as planned, folks. Exactly as planned. The new guy gets stuck with the names. So here we go.
Is everybody ready for this moment?
Is everybody ready?
Of read along. Right. Ready? In Susa, the citadel itself, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men and also killed Parshandatha and Dolphin and Aspatha and Paratha and Adalia and Eridatha and Parmashtha and Arisai and Aridai and Vizatha, the 10 sons of Haman. Yeah? Oh.
Well done. That's better than I would have done. I have a feeling he practiced a lot, because that was really good. Great job.
You just talk fast. The 10 sons of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews, but they, this is really interesting, they laid no hands on the plunder.
So it starts out in Susa, the citadel. Again, the author is focusing in on the capital city where all this took place. The king, Esther, Mordecai, Haman, the main city. Province was huge, or the empire was huge, 127 provinces. This is millions and millions and millions of people, but here we're focusing in on the citadel, or Susa, the citadel, capital city. And it says that the Jews killed about 500 people. So there's about 500 men that rose up against the Jews that were like-minded, thinking like Haman was, even though Haman had been dead for about 8 months, and they wanted to kill the Jews, right? And they came after him, and yet it says that God, through his providence and his sovereignty, took care of his people. Now remember, even though there's a huge population in Susa the citadel, only 500, small amount, were killed that rose up against him. And you see that great reversal, that idea that God took this thing that could have been the end of the Jews throughout this empire, and he turned it into something that wasn't as big of a deal as it could have been, right? And so there's 500 people. But if you remember back to Esther chapter 3, verse 15, when the edict came out, there was a lot of confusion about the edict, remember? And that was because the people in the town didn't hate the Jews. They had no clue why Haman had told them, or had this edict had come out saying, kill the Jews. There was confusion there. Esther 3:15. You see that coming into play here also. So there wasn't a lot of people when you consider the entire population there that rose up against the Jews, but there were 500 plus these 10 sons of Haman.
Which kind of makes sense. The Jewish people were just trying to ensure that there were no bad guys left, right? The retaliation or revenge against Mordecai and the Jews. And so that's why these 10 sons are listed here and covered in pretty quick fashion. But yeah.
Yeah, they wanted to take care of everything. And I love the interesting phrase there at the end. Go ahead and read that. It says, but they laid no hand on the plunder.
It's really interesting, because what this seems to be teaching us is that they, the Jewish people that received the second edict, right, that countered the first, they really honored that. They received it in an honoring way in that they used it to protect their lives but not to go any further. They didn't take advantage of the fallen. They didn't plunder their enemies. They took care of the enemies, but they didn't take it any further than that, which was what the idea of what would have happened to them. So instead of really like returning an eye for an eye, they defended themselves, but they didn't do as much as what they could have done or what would have been done to them.
Yeah, we're going to see that phrase a couple more times. The other thing we want to remember is this is in stark contrast to their ancestors, Saul, who disobeyed God. He had said, kill, but don't plunder. And Saul killed, but not all of them. Remember, it was Haman's great-great-great-grandpa. Right? And so thus we had Haman. So he didn't kill everybody he should have. And then they plundered and they weren't supposed to. So Saul's disobedience caused a lot of problems. And here we see the Jews acting in a responsible way. Verse 11, that very day, the number of those killed in Susa, the citadel, was reported to the king. The king said to Queen Esther, in Susa, the citadel, the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men and also the 10 sons of Haman. So 510, right? What then have they done with the rest of the king's provinces? Now, what is your wish? It shall be granted to you. And what further is your request? It shall be fulfilled. And Esther said, if it please the king, let the Jews who are in Susa be allowed tomorrow also to do according to this day's edict. And let the 10 sons of Haman be hanged on the gallows.
So now we see this reference to that very day. So this is the day of this great reversal, right? When the king issues this second edict, the one that you remember the first was initially intended for them. And the king says to Queen Esther, you know, he basically has a tone of admiration. He's like, wow, I can't believe, how does he word it? He wants a report, right? And then the tone that he seems to have is one of admiration, where he says, what
else do
you want? Look
at all that you've accomplished.
Look at all that you've accomplished. And so it's almost one of impulsiveness, right? The king doesn't seem to care a whole lot about the people. Remember, he had already issued one edict to destroy, to kill them all. But look at Esther's response. Esther said, let the Jews who are in Susa have one more day. And that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, she wanted one more day so that they could continue to wipe out anybody else that might be rising up against the Jewish people. She wanted to completely remove all of God's enemies. Now, the Jews had failed to do this in the past. And Haman was around because of that very thing. And so again, Esther's asking for one more day, just in case there's any more enemies out there that have risen up against the Jews to take care of everything that God wanted them to do. And an important lesson here is when God calls you to do something, don't just do it partway. Don't stop short. Don't go halfway, right? Don't leave it for somebody else to finish. What God has called you to do, no matter what it might be, do it. And he will give you the strength that you need to do that.
Verse 14, so the king commanded this to be done. A decree was issued in Susa, and the 10 sons of Haman were hanged. The Jews who were in Susa gathered also on the 14th day of the month of Adar. And they killed 300 men in Susa, but they laid no hands on the plunder.
So just a couple of facts we see here. It says the 10 sons of Haman were hanged. Now, they were already killed, so this is an interesting thing. I remember in week one, we talked about the Persian Empire. And it said of the Persian Empire that they were a very violent people. This is extra biblical sources. They figured out ways to destroy the people that they would capture or their enemies. They were a very violent people. And again, so we don't understand exactly why there was this need to take these men who were already killed. But it sounds like they, the Haman sons, were impaled on the same hanging pole that Haman was hung from. And so again, we don't know exactly why that was all done, but it was. And then there were another 300 men killed in Susa. So it looks like 800 total in Susa were killed that had risen up against the Jewish people.
And we see that phrase again, they laid no hands on the plunder. And so I've just been really thinking about that this week, and maybe you can too. I don't know what an example in your life is where, you know, go as far as you need to, not more, not less. And it's just this example in my own life, though, of not leaving things undone, of not doing things halfway. But by the grace of God, I want to see this through. I want to keep this commitment. I want to keep this spiritual discipline or whatever it might be. Don't leave things undone.
No, that's really good, Derek. That's a great challenge. Now, the rest of the Jews who were in the king's provinces also gathered to defend their lives. So again, we've looked at what happened in the capital city, where the king was living, where Esther was living. Those were those numbers, 500 plus 300, the 10 sons, about 810 people. But it says here, and got relief from their enemies and killed 75,000 of those who hated them. But they laid no hands on the plunder. Again, so all the way across the empire, the Jews were united on that. Take care of the enemy. Don't look to improve your status, but just defend yourself. Really cool there. This was on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th day, they rested and made that day a feasting. Again, another thing we've seen throughout the book here, feasting and gladness. But the Jews who were in Susa gathered on the 13th day and on the 14th day and rested on the 15th day, making that a day of feasting and gladness because they asked for that extra day. Therefore, the Jews of the villages who live in the rural towns hold the 14th day of the month of Adar as a day for gladness and feasting, as a holiday, and as a day on which they send gifts of food to one another. Now, we just passed Purim on our calendar. We don't necessarily follow the Jewish calendar, but the calendar we have hanging in our office had Purim on there. And Pastor Kevin from the other campus put out there that we were passing Purim and the date, and that one of the things was to send gifts of food to one another, but nobody came through. So I'm just going to say shame on you if you're a friend of Pastor Kevin and you read that this week and didn't send us any food. We were all waiting, but nothing happened.
Does anything else need to be said about this slide?
I don't know that it does. I think that was everything. I kind of paused my way through it. But again, I think we see God's faithfulness, and we see the Jews not plundering, which, again, is, I think, so important.
Yeah, it's really, this is a huge number, 75,000 that the enemies end up killing. But you might notice not a single Jewish casualty is mentioned. I don't know if it's because there wasn't one or if it's just because God of the epic reversals offered protection. And it's just a beautiful thing to think about. But again, they did not plunder.
Yeah.
And it's just a kind of a theme that's repeated here. So it seems to be pretty important.
Exactly. And Mordecai recorded these things and sent letters to all the Jews who were in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, both near and far, obliging them to keep the 14th day of the month of Adar and also the 15th day of the same year by year, as the days on which the Jews got relief from their enemies, and as the month that had been turned for them from sorrow into gladness and from mourning into a holiday, that they should make them a day of feasting and gladness, days sent for sending gifts of food to one another and gifts to the poor. I guess we're not Jewish, so we shouldn't have expected anything.
Right? We're going to have food at our community group tomorrow night.
Oh, there you go.
So come on out. Enjoy the fun.
There'll be some feasting and some gladness.
There's going to be some feasting. But this is such a cool picture because, how did it word it? Something about their gloom, their sorrow being turned into gladness. So for those of you that are in the middle of a season of gloom, may you have hope and faith that joy is coming. For those of you that are in a season of joy and gladness, be warned, because there might be a season of gloom on the horizon. But either way, we can have these moments where we're reminded that good or bad, gloom or sorrow or sadness or joy or happiness or peace, God works behind the scenes. So Adar, a reminder here of feasting and gladness, sending food. So the Jews accepted what they had started to do and what Mordecai had written to them. For Haman, the Agagite, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them and had cast Pur, that is, cast lots, to crush and to destroy them. But when it came before the king, he gave orders in writing that this evil plan that he had devised against the Jews should return on his own head and that he and his sons should be hanged on the gallows.
So again, we see here at the end of the book, they're just kind of recapping everything that's happened. It's a good review of the book of Esther. We're reminded of the purr, the casting of lots that Haman had used to determine the day that he was going to act back in chapter 2. And he was casting it, remember, to the mythical gods and a sorcerer and all that kind of thing, whereas Esther and Mordecai had cast their lot before the Lord. Okay? So as believers, we can cast our cares upon him because he cares for us. We can throw ourselves before the Lord, everything that we have in front of God, and he will answer us. He is so faithful.
Therefore, they called these days Purim, after the term Pur. Therefore, because of all that was written in this letter and of what they had faced in this matter and of what had happened to them, the Jews firmly obligated themselves and their offspring and all who joined them that without fail they would keep these 2 days according to what was written and at the time appointed every year, that these days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation in every clan, province, and city, and that these days of Purim should never fall into disuse among the Jews, nor should the commemoration of these days cease among their descendants. So he's talking specifically more about this festival, this feast of celebration again. And these verses, they're repetitive, aren't they? Just kind of repeating the same thing over. But I think it's intentionally he wants to solidify this as a holiday that you don't forget about, that you take seriously, that you, you know, keep it on your calendar written in ink and you don't change it and you stick to it, not to fall into disuse or to cease. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, and just like Derek was talking about, you know, making sure he remembers his anniversary, his wife's birthday, all those important dates in his lives, you know, so that he doesn't get himself into trouble, right? No, but so that he can remember these important dates, so important. And really, isn't that what a holiday is all about? If we are celebrating Easter and all we teach our kids is that there's an Easter bunny and there's eggs and that there's chocolate and that there's an Easter egg hunt, even though those things are fun, and I do those with my kids, and I hope you do those with yours, that's not the reason for Easter. And so we have an opportunity to teach and help them to remember the event of the crucifixion and the resurrection of our Savior. Same thing with Christmas. If all we do is get together with family and eat food and exchange gifts, we are missing out on a vital opportunity to encourage one another, our family or our friends, to remember Jesus Christ coming to this earth. Christmas is much bigger than the food and the presents. Those are great. Those are fun. And there's a lot of opportunity to teach. But we got to remember Jesus Christ coming. So holidays, they're important to commemorate what God has done. Dates are important so that we can commemorate what God has done, to remind us of his strength, his sovereignty, his faithfulness, to give us hope when we are hopeless. And some of you today may be sitting out there today and barely got yourself here, right? Or your spouse is coming and you're just tagging along and you're in the place of hopelessness. And let me encourage you today that God is faithful. Think back on your life when he has come through for you. Look at that time and be encouraged by it, right? And all of these things point us towards God's sovereignty, his faithfulness, and him sending Jesus Christ to this earth so that we could have a way to right our rebellious, sinful relationship with our Father God. It's all about God taking care of us and being faithful.
I don't know where you find yourselves this morning, but that has been so encouraging and so challenging to me this week, that God's faithfulness in the past gives me hope and confidence for the future. And so as we see here moving towards the end of chapter 9, we'll just keep reading, but he just keeps emphasizing this over and over with this beautiful holiday. Then Queen Esther, the daughter of Abihail and Mordecai the Jew, gave full written authority confirming this second letter about Purim. Letters were sent to all the Jews to the 127 provinces of the kingdom of Ahasuerus in words of peace and truth. that these days of Purim should be observed at their appointed seasons, as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther obligated them, and as they had obligated themselves and their offspring with regard to their fasts and their lamenting. The command of Esther confirmed these practices of Purim, and it was recorded in writing. So here we see these words of peace and truth. That was a really interesting shift in this story, where we've seen these horrible edicts and these horrible motives, but now these words being of peace and truth, the tone has shifted. And so now all of the enemies had been destroyed, and so now the Jewish people are finding themselves in a good place. And now that they're in this good place, they have a new set of questions to answer. Now that they are safe and in charge and, you know, doing okay, how are they going to move forward? How are they going to lead? And I think it goes back to when things are going good in our lives, are we still going to remember God in those moments? Because isn't it so easy when things are just going bad, when you know, it's hitting the fan and it's like, God, now I need you, right? But what about when things are good? What about when there isn't a family tragedy or everything just seems to be going smooth? May we not forget even in those moments.
Yeah, and I love this. Esther wrote it down. She wanted people to know. She wanted people to remember. So she sent it out, right? And Purim was going to be important. It was going to be a holiday to point back to the faithfulness of God. Now, we can do some of those things even in our own families, the way that sometimes we look at things and we might think that they're trite or not a big deal, or maybe even that other people make too big of a deal of it. But I was thinking about like Sunday church attendance. One of the things I want my kids as they leave our home to realize that there is importance to church attendance on Sunday, but not because you're checking off a box and somehow that's going to help you get into heaven, because it has nothing to do with that. But I want my kids to understand the importance of the church family, that they need community. So that when my son got down to the Air Force Base, one of the most important things to him was to find a church body in Colorado Springs. And as Abby leaves and next year goes to college, I want her to desire for herself, not just to make mom and dad proud, but to desire for herself to be involved in a church body where she can serve, she can grow, and then she can develop this group of friends that become family. So when there are tough seasons in her life, she will have them in addition to her blood family. It's so important. So church attendance could be one of them. Maybe it's praying. Maybe it's the way that you put your kids to bed. Maybe it's practices that you have with your spouse going through God's word. Whatever that might be, move forward in a positive way.
And Queen Esther obligates them to this, and I love how it says that she obligates not just to themselves, but their offspring, right? So they made it a family affair. She said, moms and dads, grandparents, you make sure that your family observes this. And I like how it says in regard to their fasts and their lamenting. So it's kind of this tie-in to not just when things are going good and all of the enemies are defeated, but remember when we didn't know how this story was going to pan out. Remember in those moments when you're looking around and you don't have the answers yet, remember God's faithfulness then. Remember when things have smoothed out, to not forget to look back and give God the credit and give God the glory in fasting and in joy and in pain, both ways.
Yeah, that's so good. Chapter 10, here we are, the end of the book of Esther. King Ahasuerus imposed tax. Well, we should have stopped. I mean, we're getting into taxes. This isn't good, right? King Ahasuerus imposed tax on the land and on the coastlands of the sea. And all the acts of his power and might and the full account of the high honor of Mordecai to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the king of Media and Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Ahasuerus, and he was great among the Jews and popular with the multitude of his brothers, for he sought the welfare of his people and spoke peace to all his people.
And that's where the story is ending. The credits are starting to roll on this story, right? This is the end of this great adventure that we've been studying, and we hear about Mordecai, specifically about his legacy. And what a beautiful legacy that Mordecai was able to leave. Some things that we see here about Mordecai, that his legacy was one of influence, that his legacy was one of respect and admiration. Why? Well, if you notice what we read, it's because he sought the welfare of his people and he spoke peace and truth. And so it's just made us think this week, what do we want our legacy to be? I'd really love for these types of things to be said about me. And so what would our legacy be? So just like Mordecai.
Yeah, definitely something that you can look at as you think about the monuments in your life. You think about the anchors. You think about these dates. You think about the opportunities to remember. And how are they influencing those you come in contact with in regards to your legacy? Because we see here that Mordecai finished well. Mordecai finished well. This was a huge story in the Jews' life. This was an experience for so many Jewish people, and it was monumental, the victory that God had procured for his people. One of the greatest reversals in history, when the Jews should have been wiped out, right? They were actually given favor. They went from hopeless to full of hope. They went from mourning to gladness. They went from fasting to feasting, from sorrow to celebration, all because God was sovereign behind the scenes.
What's interesting is if you know anything about the Jewish people, this wasn't the end of their struggles. More things happened throughout their history, but in spite of the new troubles to come, we can look back at these moments of God's faithfulness and say, God, you have proven yourself, and so I'm going to choose to believe, even if I can't see through it right now in this moment. More trouble would come again, but they had these anchors for the soul to know that God is sovereign, to know that he is in control, and to know that he is good and that he cares. When I cannot see it, I can choose to believe that God is still good. And that's what we have to do, I think, in our lives. It's not a cop-out, because bad things are bad things. And we're not trying to say to leave here this morning and to say, how are you doing? And if things aren't so good, for you to lie and say things are great, because they might not be. But even when things really are bad, we can say with confidence, knowing that God is still good, and that gives us an anchor for our soul. It's really important to remember who God is.
Sorry, I went too far there.
Well, I think it's just, I mean, even if we look back, like James talked about this. James said, you know, in times of trouble to ask God who gives generously if any of you are lacking of wisdom. And so whether it's from our story of Esther, Habakkuk, James, we see this repeated throughout that suffering is a part of our lives.
Yeah, James actually says that doubting during the time of trials is like being tossed by the wind. And we as Christians don't have to be tossed by the wind. And in our testimony that we can have to the world around us when we testify to the faithfulness of God can be so strong.
So how does the Lord want us to live our lives from this moment? And I think it's in honesty. And I think it's in honesty saying that this situation might be good, or it's an honesty saying that things are okay right now. And wherever on that spectrum you find yourself between like pure, just horribleness and you know what, things are pretty okay. No matter where you are, I think we all need to just be reminded of that truth, that God is good, that he is faithful, and that I can trust him. So what we wanted to do is wanted to give you a little assignment. The Jews, we talked about.
A little homework assignment.
Yeah, this celebration of Purim. And I don't know if you look back over your life, what some of your monuments might be. Some of your spiritual just milestones in your life, and you're looking back and you're like, I remember that was the day when. That was the day when I came to faith. That was the day when I realized I wanted to take my faith seriously. Maybe you went on a mission trip. Maybe you were just laying in your bed one night and it was just like, bam, you know, your eyes were opened or something. And I don't know what it is for you. Maybe you don't really have any yet, but it's just something to think about. But our challenge for you is for you to take some time today and just really look back over your life and to identify those moments and to say, these were the times in my life when God really was faithful, when he helped me through this situation. He proved himself. And I think that if you start to write those things down, you begin to celebrate those things and you have these monuments in your life, it's really going to help anchor you in the future struggles to come. So begin to celebrate those things, whatever they may be. And it might take a minute to think about and to work through. But we just really hope that you give thought to that. What is your Purim? What is your monument or anchor?